Hockey and music go hand in hand. I mean, you can't even start a game if you don't have a hard pumping song to get you going. And of course, the music for the Mother Puckers openings and closing song, Havoc by Sean Tubbs, sounds even better thanks to J-Rocket Audio Design's pedals. For you hockey moms out there who also have guitar players, there's no better pedal on the market to help your budding Jeff Beck sound like Jeff Beck than with the JB Archer from J-Rocket Audio Designs or any of the many award-winning pedals produced by them. Other than the sound, the best part is they are made in the USA. All you have to do is go to rocketpedals.com. That's with two T's, R-O-C-K-E-T-T, pedals, P-E-D-A-L-S.com, to hear and see the products, find distributors, and enjoy the website experience. And if you purchase a pedal from JRAD, please use the code PUCKERS because that is going to get you 10% off of your purchase. And I will personally thank you on my podcast. And when your little player plays himself a little song or records it, send it on in. I'll make a compilation and put them all out on the podcast in the future. Thank you to J-Rocket Audio Designs for being the first Mother Puckers sponsor. Welcome to Mother Puckers, the first and only podcast for hockey moms by a hockey mom, and that's me, Julie Bardowski, alongside the hockey apostle and the 13th disciple, Lou Mangialuzzo. Welcome to the show. Hey, Lou.
How you doing today?
Doing very well, very well. How are you today?
I'm good. Got a new dog.
Uh-oh. What's its name?
Yeah, a new dog, Rolo, because he has caramel feet, and he's a poodle and Bernese Mountain Dog, but he's a mini.
Oh, yeah?
So he'll never be more than 25 pounds, or roughly that. And Rolo, because the caramel candy Rolo, you know, cool candies that come like it. So we called him Rolo. That was Grace's idea.
That's a good idea. And,
yeah, it's been wild. March, little guy passed away in March. Mm-hmm. They almost look a little bit alike, actually. He was like a poodle, a Yorkie poo. So, you know, I called him Cole the other day. So, but that's going good. He's just a baby, 10 weeks, you know, as, you know, probably paid a lot of money for a mutt, but that's okay.
Yeah, I'm guessing about 200 bucks a pound you paid for your mutt.
Oh, yeah, we paid quite a bit. Yes, we did.
You're going to be 25 pounds. Yeah, so you're perpetuating the expensive mutt trade.
Yes, we are. That's what happens. You know, love's in the eye of the beholder, and they went to some store and saw them, and that was it.
Aw. I love the name, though. The name is good, but when we get our new puppy, we're going to compare prices and pedigrees.
Yeah, well, I'm sure your pedigree would be a whole lot better. But that doesn't mean you're going to love them anymore, though.
No, it doesn't. They're the best. It's such a racket what the oodle industry has done. Good for those breeders, you know?
Yeah.
Because, my Lord, if I had seen breeding mutts would get me $5,000 a dog.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be all in on that.
With Brian Hunter that works in Minnesota, God, I've known him for 30 years. He's got two, I don't even know what they are, but they're little things. They're not Shih Tzus, but they're like...
the Pekingese? Like, they have the fur?
Yeah, they're not Pekingese, but they're like... I'm ashamed, I don't even know what they are, but they're little, and they're beautiful, and they're adorable. And he said to me last night on the phone... And I've never really heard this from anybody about anything for the most part. He says, you never have a bad day with a dog.
Oh, it's the truth. It's 100% the truth.
I mean, maybe when they pass away, but there's never, Like, there's never a bad day with them. They love you to death in every way, right?
In every way. Yeah, I was just out. Yeah,
they're the only creature on Earth like that.
Oh, I know. It's unconditional, constant love. Well, and they're funny. Like, my dog, Dave, he makes me gut laugh every day. He's that kind of a dog. And I was just out in the yard watering, you know, because we just seeded and down here in the South, and it's time to, you know, water, make sure everything's good for the spring so it comes up nice and fresh. And I'm moving the sprinklers around because we don't have an automatic sprinkler system, because it's like $14,000 to put in a sprinkler system.
So we don't have that. And we're getting it.
Oh, not here. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got a big yard and everything. The cool thing, though, is we've got a river behind us. So we can pull the water out of the river instead of having to pay the city.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So that's good. But, I look behind me and there's Dave running through the sprinklers, chasing them and having a good time. And I'm like,
oh. Yeah, they're great. I think it's like, I was reading a while back that it's something like 90% of the American public has an animal, a pet.
Oh yeah. 90%. I wonder how many of those are cat versus dog owners. Cause you know, they're
I'm just saying, people have cats, they have dogs, they have other kinds of pets too. I mean, pythons, you know, people have hamsters and
alligators.
But they have, I mean, I would say dog, cat, and then I think people have like hamsters.
Yeah.
You know?
We had a guinea pig when Micaiah was little.
We had a hamster. I had a hamster, cat, dog. I'm not a cat person, but we had a cat when I was young. Cat, dog, hamster, duck.
Duck? How'd you get a duck?
We had a duck.
We eat duck in our family.
I don't know why. We had a duck. I think it was a duck. I don't know what made us buy a duck. I have no idea. I can't even remember now. Anyway, so that's it. What else is going on?
Your hair's looking pretty fresh. I like it.
I got it cut short, but it's getting a little long again. It's been about 7, 10, 12 days, so I got to get another haircut. There's a big debate around my home with my wife's friends and stuff that, he looks great with longer hair. And everybody says, no, you look older with longer hair. So, like, you know, I'm trying to figure it out. But it gets gray. So when it gets long, it's like out of control, you know?
Yeah, but men with gray hair is a very distinguished dapper look.
Yeah, well, when it's true. But when it's anyway.
Yeah. I'm a hair less today. Today's been quite a day. I had a good workout this morning, upper and lower body. I do that F45, you know, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I do that. I'm not up to that. But I do need to go to the gym today because I haven't been there for a week. I've been traveling, long trip. This weekend was brutal.
Oh, yeah. Talk about that.
I went to Utica, where the Devil's Old Farm team played at around that bank center, but I had never been in it. But behind that building is the place called the Nexus Center, and in there, there's four arenas. There's four rinks. One's where the Utica College men and women play, and then there's three other rinks, and they're all, like, right together in one big building. It's a beautiful complex, and they have, like, balconies. So, like, when you're going on the ground floor, that's where the rinks are. And you can travel along the bottom, like by the wall and the rinks, but above they have these balconies. They put balconies. They're just like, it's like almost like a running track. You can run around it, right?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're really, what a beautiful complex. The only thing was that when the whistle blows on one surface, you can kind of hear it. But aside from that,
that happens to me when I'm in rinks and I'll hear the rink or I'll hear the whistle from the other rink and be like, what foul? Yeah. I don't see any penalties. But what's going on?
Yeah, it's open. It's beautiful. Really nice. Went there, got there Saturday night, about 4, stayed to 10, had to go see a young man from Florida up in Rochester. So I left around 10 or 11, no hotel. That was a 2-hour ride. Had to go all the way to Buffalo to get a place to stay because I had to get up. I had to be at that rink at 9. I didn't want to drive from Utica. So my plan was to stay in Rochester, you know, 20 minutes over to the rink. Instead, it was I had to go all the way out near Buffalo and come back, get up at 7, got the bed at 3, up at 7, get there at 9, watched him in a tier 1 tournament, which was a bit disappointing, to be honest, with the level of play. And then came back to Utica and left around dinner time after watching that was called the Northeast Pack event in Utica with, you know, the Rockets and the Gulls and Bishop Kearney and the Mount St. Charles. So there was good competition. A lot of money being spent there.
Yeah.
Well,
wait, so because there was no hotels, is that part of the $6 billion that the state of New York is using for immigrants to stay?
I was told this by the hotels. I'm not making it up, but I was in Long Island the week before, out all the way out at Superior Rink out there, almost a half hour this side of the Hamptons to see the Royals play. And there was nothing. Long Island Marriott, Melville Marriott, Garden City Marriott, the Hampton Inn, Holiday Inn, all within. So I had to drive all the way because I was coming back to the ice vault. I was going to Barnabas Center where the Devils practice. The arena has a little bit next to it.
Yeah.
So I had to go there. So I tried to get further forward so I could back. I got a place in Long Island City, which is Queens, which I had never been to Long Island City that I can remember. And I got a room there and it was 60% capacity for. I said, where are all the people coming from? She says, from all over the world. And I'm sure hotel industry's taking the money from the federal government. But, you know, when you have 150,000 immigrants or migrants, whatever, coming to one city or one state.
A day.
You're not prepared to house them.
Yeah.
It's what you have. So my man made arrangements this week. I got in early, so I'm going to stay in Buffalo at the Marriott there in the courtyard, whatever, one of those places. And then I'm going to, the following week, I'm in Marlborough to see an event there and the exposure event in Foxborough. So okay. Next 2 weeks, planned out.
Get your hotel rooms fat soon.
I did that already.
You know, that's something to think about, though, for parents, because there's a lot of travel going on. And, I mean, there's concern for safety. You know, there's been issues that have happened across the board with the immigrants. And so there is the concern for safety. So parents, I guess my suggestion is, number one, book early, make sure you have your hotels. And number two, just, you know, stay safe.
Listen, I want to say on that note, listen, it's not their fault.
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. So, but I had an incident at the Residence Inn. A woman was checking everybody in. It was late at night when I got there. It was a long line. And then this fella had come up next to the counter to buy something. And she said, I'm waiting on somebody. You're going to have to wait. Oh, no. And I leaned over and I said, now I'm not from that area. And you don't know people today. Like you don't know where you're at. You're in a different animal. It's a different animal, right?
Yeah.
So you have to think for a second, but evidently I wasn't thinking because I probably should have been smarter about it. Nothing happened, but I said, yo, jackass, get to the back of the line. The woman's trying to help all these people in line. You don't just walk your ass up here and get in line and without getting in line, expect service. And he looked at me and I looked right back at him. He just said one more word. I think I'd have said, well, let's just go after him. But he just walked away. And I followed him out after he was at the California license plate in the van. But anyway, probably should be more.
They're infiltrating everywhere, the Californians?
Yeah, I don't know.
I went and saw a comedian a couple of weeks ago here in Nashville. She moved from California to here, and she calls herself a recovering Californian. And her whole comedy shtick is around learning how to live in the South, being from California. So it's pretty funny. She pointed to corn stalks and she said, these are Tostito trees. So, you know, speaking of laws and rules, so there's two new rules out of Hockey Canada this year. I'd love to hear what you think about them. So the first one is that the QMJHL, they kind of have been weeding out fighting as it is, but they made the decision that this year that there will be no more fighting. No more. And it's more than the 5-minute major and the game suspension. It's bigger than that, what they would get. It's a 10-minute misconduct to the 5-minute major and the game suspension. So it's a lot. So some of their reasoning for it, and this is what I want to hear from you, is the number of concussions that the players get. Now, I don't know about you, Lou, but how hard and heavy of a fight, fist, you know, hit, and who hits in the head anyway, because there's already a helmet there, you're going to break your hand, but how many fights end up in concussions? Are you aware of any of that?
I don't know any statistics on that. I don't know any numbers on how many players get a concussion from getting punched in the head. I would think it's very little.
I would, okay. I would, too. I mean, you have to really knock your head in order to get a concussion. And so that was one of the reasons for it.
Yeah, I think most players that get a concussion get, you know, I think there was a time about 30 years ago, a woman said to me, oh, I'm glad he has a mouth guard so he doesn't get his teeth knocked out. And I said, that's not why he wears a mouth guard. Well, what do you mean? I said, because when you get it concussed, the jaw bounces on each other. It hits, you know, it, your jawbone cracks. You know, it goes, it hits, you know, inside your mouth, and the jawbone crashes down. That's where you get concussed from. It's not, the mouthpiece is not, that little mouthpiece is a cushion that's supposed to save you from getting jaw on jaw or teeth, you know what I mean?
And,
not
and the teeth through
not
your
to
tongue.
Save your teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. Not to save your teeth. That boy, a puck hits your teeth. You can have 20 mouth guards on his back and stop you getting the teeth knocked out. It's a whole idea that it's a cushion in there to stop the jaw, the trauma from the jaw hitting, banging on each other.
Or right? If Wendell Clark hits you in the mouth guard, you're going to lose your teeth.
But I don't know. I don't know what the stats on that would be. I would think it's very little. I mean, I'm sure there's a guy gets concussed, but it usually comes from a hit. Hit on the wall, hit on the glass, elbow to the head.
Not a fight.
You know?
Yeah.
No, not a fight. So who actually said that was one of the reasons?
Yeah, the other reason is because they are like, today's hockey game is that of skills and speed and agility and athleticism, and fighting has no place for that.
Well, I'll just say this on that. It is the only sport that condones it.
Other than boxing and MMA.
Well, it's not, yeah, I mean, that's the whole sport. But of the four major sports, and I do throw in soccer, it's five or whatever, if that's a bit, or around the world, it might be one, but in our country. So I don't know where that comes from. Well, I kind of know where it comes from. It's this new social landscape over the last 20 or 30 years. That whole generation has done a lot of damage in a lot of areas. It's not just taking fighting away from hockey, but
I like fighting. To be honest with you, I like the purpose of it. I like keeping things in check, in line. You know, hey, I was watching a college football game this weekend, and it was during warmups. I'm trying to remember which game it was. It might have been, I can't remember. It was a big game, but one player went into the opposing team who were kind of like huddled around. It was pregame and comes skipping through, you know, he's hyping himself up, getting ready for the game. And he kind of travels through this group and they start, you know, pushing at him because he's probably jawing at him. You know, he's probably like, we're going to crush you guys. I'm saying that in the nice way. And they just started just blah, 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 before the game even started. And I was like, yeah, I love that. I love that he's getting hyped up and that he's bringing the, you know, the competition and we're going to kick your butts and all. I love that stuff. I think that's what sports are supposed to be. I'm going back to the gladiator age. Do you think that they were like, oh, I didn't mean to hit you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. No.
Of course. Yeah, but for me, I always thought a reaction to an action in hockey was always good in terms of Mike Fisher fought, you know, the Richards kid, Mike Richards from Philadelphia, because it was a high-end hit or whatever, and they get in the tussle and get in the fight. More than likely, those two guys aren't going to kill each other. I mean, yeah. You know. But I think sometimes now with these big guys, Reeves and some of these other guys, I do see where one of these guys hits the guy on the button, he can hurt him.
Oh yeah, you can kill somebody if you hit him just right in the nose, like you go like that. Boom.
I think it was Fedora who got knocked out at the Garden. Might have been with Anaheim. I can't remember who he was with. He played for Philadelphia. Good guy. He got knocked out cold, and the fans were yelling and screaming when the fight was going on. When he got hit, he was on his back. You could have heard a pin drop.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody was screaming or yelling then.
Yeah.
So that's my only thing. I don't really like the stage fighting. Not stage, but I don't really like what's the purpose of two tough guys hitting, fighting each other. Everybody knows to some extent what they're there for. I get their enforcer. I get all that. I would really rather see that out of the game. I don't have a problem overall with the fighting. And we don't see much of it anymore as we did, you know, even 10 years ago. But two tough guys fighting each other, I'm not much for that. I'm really just not much for it.
Really? I'm the opposite. Yeah, I like it. I like it in the game. I think it escalates the level of the game. It makes not just the fans, because we're part of it, but it makes the benches go, yeah, we're going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. But I think the players get more excited when two guys that don't fight for each other, or a guy that,
yeah.
You know, like, what's your name got in a fight the other night? The Farrier from Harvard.
Yes.
He got in a fight. Believe me, I know that kid. I know his father. I know the whole family.
Yeah.
That's the last thing. You know, he stuck up for himself, and he was throwing them. And that was, to me, I was going, wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, the tough guys that fight all the time, and that's their role. I wouldn't have a problem seeing that go past the wayside, but it's still part of the game. And listen, they haven't outruled it.
Yet. QMJHL or QJMHL. How come I can't ever get those consonants?
Call it the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League.
Yeah, the Quebec Major QMJHL. Yeah. Well, the other thing Hockey Canada did is they passed a rule, the minimum attire rule, that requires players to wear a base layer anytime they're in the dressing room when there's at least one other person in the room. So,
well,
no more naked butts, no more underwear dances for the 10-year-olds, no more any of that. And this one also just got passed. There wasn't any conversation. There was no answer to the why. There were no, like, issues or situations. So maybe it's a preemptive, if it's, you know, making sure that everybody who's inclusive is good. The St. Thomas University, a sociology professor, Christy Elaine, she said, I think we have to ask questions about why. If a community, the LGBTQ community, the Muslim community, is asking for it, then we should have it. But if no one's asked for any of it, then it's just a distraction from some of the other hard changes that need to happen to make hockey a safe place for women, for all of the communities that they're trying to. So I don't know. There's no study. There's no consultation with anybody. It's just kind of, hey, here's our new rule. Kind of like we're taking away icing and power plays. we're gonna.
Well, it only, you know, few people in charge,
yeah,
seem to make all the rules, especially in Canada. That's become like a dictatorship anyway. They do anything they want. Like, they can't get their airline straightened out. They can't get Sport Canada straightened out.
Yeah.
They can't get junior team straightened out. So I think they know it. It's not somebody saying. They've got, obviously, some things going on. So I'm not surprised that, you know, I'm not surprised that things are going the way they're going, right?
Yeah.
I don't.
I just figure it's going to come down to the States and go to Sweden, Finland, Switzerland. It's, you know, it's just kind of starting there, and they're going to, like, infiltrate. And so I just wanted to bring up these couple of rules and just, I don't know. I've not been in a locker room setting where, you know, the team shower together and do all that. But I know from my son that when they did start showering, there's always fun stories. You know, they're having fun in the locker room. They're having fun when they're showering. They, you know what I mean? It's never been a situation. And we've played a lot of hockey with a lot of teams, and we've never had a problem with it.
I haven't been in a locker room for so long. I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you. I think there's lots of things happening across the social landscape and everything. And
well, they, at least USA Hockey got rid of phones in the locker room years ago. And I know that that's kind of, it's up to the organization to monitor it and make sure. But that's another thing. We've never had a problem in any setting with phones in the locker room doing anything, you know, mischievous.
Yeah, I'm a little out of touch with that, like, because I'm not in a locker room anymore. But we all see lots of things that are to us are sideways, but somebody's making the rules, and evidently they can make the rules without going through a committee or any kind of legislation, or, you know, I don't know where it all, well, I kind of know where it all comes from. I just think it's a change in the landscape for people that don't like what was going on, and they're making the rules now, and they can do what they want, right? I mean,
and not answer why.
No, because in many places now, it's run by a hierarchy that you can't say anything. You can't do, like, you know, it's like now the way it is pretty much with everything is that you, it's great when you're saying something someone likes, but if you're saying something someone doesn't like, you can't talk.
So I've got a letter from a mom that's for you that I'm going to give you. I'm going to read this to you for your advice to her, since this is going to be in your age group and you're going to have these. All right. It says, Dear Lou, I should put in there, hockey apostle.
Yeah, she wrote me the letter?
Yeah, on my email. Mm-hmm. Says,
oh my God.
I have a U18 who's having a rough time with his team. He's the leading scorer. He had 3 assists in the game this past weekend. They had an additional practice tonight, and only 6 kids showed. Her kid plus 5 others that included a captain, 1 assistant captain, and 2 others. And those 4 started criticizing this kid's game. She said that we were there, and we heard these kids telling him that his deke sucks. And first of all, you know, anyway, yeah, I won't say anything. His deke sucks. He's too slow on his windup. And she said her son tried to take it well and not, you know, not get brought into the conversation. But now he's upset and says he will never speak to those kids again. He's planning on talking to the coach, who is the captain's father. And if it happens again, the U18 wants to quit hockey. He also had put himself up for the second assistant captain's role twice, both times getting voted down. What should I do? Meaning the mom. What should the mom do in this situation?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you bring it to the coaches. Look, a lot of parents are coaching kids today still. Their kids playing the team. I see this with a lot of pros.
He's 18.
A lot of former pros are coaching their own kids.
Oh,
and
yeah.
When their kids are done, they'll be done too. So
yeah.
For every pro that I know that tells me about how he's doing it, the only guy I know that's been doing it after, I'm sure there are a few, but the only pro that I know that's doing it after his kid's gone is Sean Hines with the Florida Lions. His kid went to Oshawa, and he's still coaching. But a lot of pros I know, they're coaching their own kids. And when their kid's done, they'll be done coaching too, which I don't like, really. I don't want to start naming them all because there's a lot of them.
There's a ton.
U18, I mean, they're getting older. I mean, she went to the coach and talked to him about it. He talked to him about it, right? Right? Correct?
Well, that's what she's saying that he's going to do, is go to the coach and talk to him. Who is the dad of the captain? And I remember, know, was the person who said that, no, you're not going to be our assistant captain twice.
Yeah. Oh, well, kids can be mean, right? Well, I mean, I don't know if I have any specific, I mean, kids are mean, right? I mean, they get mean, right?
But Lou, okay. I see where you're going. Here's where I am on it. First off, if they're chirping him, your deke sucks, you're slow on your windup. Well, okay, what should I do if I'm the guy? Okay, what should I do? How should I wind up better? You know, it seems to be working for me. I'm the leading scorer. You know, it's not bullying what they were doing. A lot of people
maybe
are thinking that's
jealousy.
Bullying. It's jealousy, number one, yeah, in my opinion. And number two, they're not his people. If they're chirping him and he had tried to be assistant captain twice and got turned down twice, he's not their people. So either stay and learn the game or move on.
Yeah, it's certainly not envy, because there's a big difference. I think some people, I run into people, they don't even know the difference between envy and jealousy.
Oh,
and jealousy jealousy comes with a threatening caveat to it. It's there's kids are threatened by him, obviously. So I would just do your own thing, address it, and move on, and don't worry about, I wouldn't worry about, and this is small things in life compared to what you go through, but I wouldn't worry about those other kids mentioning it, that you didn't like it, to the boss or the coach. And if it continues, then obviously you either move forward and play there and block it out, or you address it in a different way. It's not a, you know, stick your stones or break my bones and names will never hurt me. So,
there you go.
You know, there's a lot of jealousy in this world. And you just have to take it in stride and be the bigger person and look at them and go, well, whatever, and just move on. I mean,
yeah, that's good advice. Move on.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy to
block it out.
You know, there's a lot of mean people in this world.
Well, I mean, if you're getting to higher levels or whatever in the whole social media thing, like you hear all these superstars don't even read their social media because there's so many haters out there. And that gets in your head. So you have to learn to block a lot of things out.
Yeah, well, I'm off to Buffalo this week again to watch some Pier 1. I think it's 08s and 07s.
Okay.
And then following week, I'm at the Exposure Tournament in Foxborough with the Junior Bruins Shootout up in Marlboro, Mass. And then it slows down on the tournaments a little bit. There's more game by game, day by day. Okay, I want to bring up something else I saw on Twitter last night. It was the Chicago Bears game.
Oh, yeah.
They must have had a fight. What possesses another person to hit someone when they're not looking? I don't understand this. Like, I watched this guy who had a Bears jersey on, who hit another guy with a Bears jersey. Like, and they're in the corridor where maybe, I don't know what the stadium's like, it rolls up to where you go to your seat. It's like a runway. You must go up ramps to get into the ballpark or whatever it is. And a fight broke out. And I don't know what possesses a grown man, to punch another grown man when the guy's not looking. I see this a lot. And you do too, right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
When there's a fight. Why? I don't really get it. I don't even get it. If there's,
well, because
if there's not even a little bit of honor
cat.
Or duty to it.
Because the guy who hits him unknowingly, he's a big old scaredy cat. You know what I mean?
I saw this on Twitter just yesterday, and I'm going like, wow. You know, and that's why I don't go. That's why I kind of believe that I don't go much to football. I don't go at all to football. I don't want to get urinated.
I have seen. I don't want to get massive fights in football. I've seen massive fights in baseball. I've seen massive fan fights in hockey. I don't go to soccer, so I can't talk to that. But
yeah,
these people are brutal. And, hey, they're just hyped up for their team. Again, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, okay. Have another drink, right? That's what it is. Have another beer.
Yeah, have another beer. Yeah. I watched a guy once. Oh, it's a good one. I watched a guy once at a Cardinals game. He was so drunk, and he was walking down the stairs to go fight this other guy. Well, he tripped over his feet, and he face-surfed down the concrete steps. So by the time he stood up, His entire face was bloody. He'd lost a tooth. He, you know, couldn't even see the guy to be able to fight him because he was already bleeding all over his face. So instead of fighting the guy, he got in a fight with the stairs by face surfing down him. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Good for him.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I like a cocktail too, but I don't want to be like that. So
no, but hey, it's pure entertainment for the rest of us.
Yeah, and it's always the women that cause a lot of this shit. Just so you know,
I would fight myself. Before. I would not send my husband to do my fighting for me.
I see a lot of these fights in football stadiums, and yeah, it's the woman that throws fear from the distance, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, and then the guy's getting up.
No way, man. Well, I'd be right up in the guy's face waiting for him to just go. But I'm built a little different, Lou.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right. Well, let's kick it over to Dan, and we'll catch up next week. Safe travels to you.
Okay. You too.
All
okay.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Today, I'm excited to introduce you to Dan Mays, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins Elite 18U Prep Team. He has been with the Penguins Elite for the last 4 years, and we talk all about it and all of the great things and the struggles and the trials and tribulations that happened in what I've always been terming the teenage wasteland years. And prior to that, he was at Trine University in Indiana, where he served as the head coach for the ACHA D2 team and as the assistant coach for the NCAA team. In his 2 seasons as coach of the ACHA team, the Thunder compiled a record of 54-9-2. They also qualified for the ACHA D2 National Tournament in each of the seasons he was there. Dan has served in many coaching roles in his career. In 2015, he served as an NCAA volunteer coach at Bowling Green State University. He was a product of the Detroit Rock City Hockey collaborative, because there's so many teams there, as well as he coached for Little Caesars. He coached at Honey Baked. He coached at the Catholic Central High School, which is the high school hockey team to play for if you're going to play in Michigan. And he is going to share with you how supportive and amazing his wife Monique and their 2 kids are to his coaching career. And he gives a nice shout out to you, Monique. And I'm super excited to share with you my friend, Dan Mays.
The why of what we're doing here. And again, that's why we try to make it more than about a scholarship or playing in the North American League or the USHL. Like no one's wakes up as a 5-year-old and dreams of playing in the USHL or the North American League. Like they
play in the NHL.
Yeah, they want to play in the NHL. You know, and those are all great leagues. And I just think we have to get to a point where, you know, it's obviously not youth hockey, but we got to treat people right and you know, and set people up for success. I think there are so many really good hockey players and not as many opportunities. And mm-hmm. So the teams do have the power, but with that power comes some responsibility, I think, in treating people correctly. And mm-hmm. I've had a lot of very, very good hockey players with bright futures that ultimately they make that first step into their hockey journey and they make the wrong decision and they're out of hockey as quick as they got into it. And it's sad.
That's sad.
Tragic, you know. So
yeah, it happens at like I think 2 different or 3 different stages. It's at the 12-year mark because they're going to start hitting, and then it's at the junior hockey when you get the large fall off of people playing hockey. And then it's the junior hockey years if they weren't drafted or, you know, whatever, 17, 18. And then I think the final drop-off is at the 25, 26 because then the kids are like, yeah, it really isn't going to happen for me.
Yeah. So. Well, it's like, you know, you get your – with the major junior in colleges, like the players that have an opportunity to get drafted in the OHL, mm-hmm. that attracts the colleges and forces the colleges yeah. into a commitment. After major junior is kind of out of the picture when the players are, you know, 17 years old, now the colleges are going to, you know, they may still commit to a 17-year-old that's playing 18U hockey, but, you know, they have to really show, like, jump off. Typically, they're going to be a little bit more patient, and it might be as simple as, hey, we're going to watch your first two or three junior games and then pull the trigger on you. But it does, once you get past that OHL draft here, it does require some patience with the families and the players and, you know, and ultimately, what do these commitments even mean?
Exactly.
Anyway, so.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's a nice Twitter moment, I call it, or whatever. And but, you know, listen, I've talked to college coaches just today, and it's like the players have a responsibility also to continue to develop.
Yes, they do.
So it's not just the colleges pulling their commitments, but so.
No, yeah, you're right. And it's hard to tell at, you know, August of their right before their junior year compared to 2 to 3 years down the road, it is hard to tell who that player is going to be. But I'll tell you, just because we're in that, you know, stage of seeing all of these kids, you know, committing and looking at colleges and that, and everything for the past couple, 3 years, it's fascinating that there's a rush to it by the kids. Excuse me. And they, you know, they're like, well, we want to be, we just want to have that over with, and, you know, we don't have to worry about it anymore. And I'm like,
yeah,
you're going to still be worrying about it because that coach may leave, that commitment can get pulled. You know, what advice do you have to parents in that realm?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's imperative that there are a lot of, you know, we deal with this all the time where, especially that August date when everybody's the early commits can start committing, and it's the fear of missing out type thing. And what I just advise everybody to do is, like, you know, you want to force a commitment that isn't right for your son and your family, and ultimately it's just a superficial thing, and you're setting yourself up for that commitment to not work. It's almost like going into a marriage after just going on one date, you know,
and
it's like,
you
need to make sure that it's the right place for you. Something I've always, and it's a little bit different at the Division III level and the ACHA level, but when I was at Trine, you know, we had a player who ended up helping us as a student coach. He didn't make it through our first tryout of our inaugural team. He got his, like, sixth concussion in the tryout. And I'm like, and he stuck around, graduated. He's coaching there to this day, Kyle Williams. And something I began talking to our recruits about, if you step on campus and something, they were to somehow take hockey away from you, and again, I hope this doesn't happen, do you want to be here? You know, and if the answer is no, then this probably isn't the right spot for you. So, you know, I think, you know, obviously the hockey portion is so big for all these families, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be. But I think it needs to be a place that, you know, if hockey is taken away from you, that you value that degree. It's a place you're going to have fun and be able to spend the last 4 or 5 years of your life where it's truly just about you and trying to become the best version of yourself before kind of life comes at you. So I just think it's important that you find the right place. I know there's timing that comes into it sometimes. Some of these schools, because, you know, if they put an offer out, some advisors or agents to start shopping it to other people, they put hard deadlines on it. And I would advise people, like, okay, if you're not comfortable with that, don't just make the commitment to make the commitment, you know,
for your Twitter moment.
Yeah. And those are moments, but you want to make decisions that are going to set you up for the rest of your life.
Yes.
You know, and there's how many of these 14 or 15 year old superstars, they commit to Big Ten schools and, you know, they don't even make it to college hockey. They just end up, they go again. It's a bad situation in junior hockey, and it's a snowball effect, and they end up falling out of love with the game. And you know. So it's important that you make the right decision, not the quick decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's really great. So in this 16 to 19 year teenage wasteland, it's don't make the quick decision, make the right decision. It's take your time, experience, explore, make sure program college, wherever you're going, feels good, even if it were taken away. Yeah. That, and that goes even for the program. You want to be able to say, wow, they really treated me well.
Yeah.
Even though I got hurt or I did leave or whatever, you know, that was a good experience. So,
and those are questions you can ask in the recruiting process. Have you had anybody that has had to medically retire? What is your guys' policy as a school with that? Do they keep their scholarship? Do they, you know, do you honor
that? I'd
want
to know that.
Yeah. I mean, because nobody thinks it's going to be them. Nobody on, purposely blows their knee out or has their seventh concussion or whatever. Yeah. But, I mean, it's the reality of the sport. So, I mean.
Yeah. Interesting. That's a good little tidbit. Hadn't thought of that one.
A life hack for you.
Yeah, so. I like it. So, so before we go, since this is a Hockey Moms podcast, if you've got a great hockey mom story, meaning crazy hockey mom story from all of your years, is there anyone that stands out that you can share?
Ooh,
and it's a family show.
Hockey moms. Oh, geez.
Maybe some of the things your mom did as you were growing up.
So, okay, my mom, she's actually been passed away for, this will be her fifth year. She was awesome. No, it's great hockey mom. I was a very, very, and I'm being nice to myself, very average hockey player. She thought I was Wayne Gretzky, Sidney Crosby, whatever great player you want to think of. She, like, when I got to junior hockey, I was in and out of the lineup a lot. And I was started when I was 18-year-old. And, you know, like, I think one time she was timing my shifts and stuff. And I was like, Mom, just stop. Like, I got to figure this out myself and work through it. But she was never – I've definitely ran into crazier hockey moms. But she always let me know how much she – how great I was. Now my wife and I, Monique, we have a 10-year-old, so he's kind of playing his second or third year, and sometimes I got to check her a little bit with her being the hockey mom. She gets fired up at some of the parents, and it's funny.
Good for her.
Yeah, so
I like seeing that passion still because it dies out as they get older.
Yeah,
and I'm so frustrated with that.
You know what? Like that. There's times too where like I feel like, you know, parents at this age at 16 and 18 is like, it's okay to cheer for your kids.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's there's times where I feel like we're in a really tight game and against maybe a team that our parents don't think that it should be tight. And it's like, no, this is 16U, 18U hockey. It's those players on the other team are all mature young adults that are good hockey players.
Yeah.
And, so sometimes I feel like in our program, our parents get nervous and I'm like, you know what? Cheer for that great save. Cheer for that goal. Like, we're not a country club here, right? Like, let's enjoy this. You know?
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I was at the USA Hockey National Camp in end of June.
Yeah.
And a kid that I know well, made this sick goal.
Yeah.
And I'm down at the end where all the scouts are, in the stands, you know, and there's just a smattering of parents. And I was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody turned and looked at me. I'm like, not even my kid, but that was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm the only voice amongst all of them.
Yeah.
And I missed that. It was kind of fun sitting here, with this juniors game with this USHL Fall Classic that y'all are hosting, because each time we scored, I happened to be sitting in the whole line of parents. They all stood up.
Yeah.
They all stood up and were cheering. I'm like, oh, they're my people.
Yeah.
So feel pretty good about that.
You should cheer for your son. I don't know when
totally
that became a crime.
Agree. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
So when they're younger, they all complain about the cowbells.
Yeah.
But now that they're older, they just sit there, you know, like stumps. And
yeah. No, I mean, hockey moms are the best. I mean, there is no hockey without the moms.
No. I mean, it's physically impossible.
Yeah. Well, that, but just as far as like just everything that you guys do, it's amazing. Does not, and dads are in there too, but oh, yeah. It's, you know, you guys do a great job and we appreciate you. So.
Well, great. Well, then I'm going to wear my I Am That Mom t-shirt more often.
All right, yeah,
you can. And I'll have to tell you the story about it off air.
Okay.
How I got adopted as that mom.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your time. I know that you're so busy and you're getting your team ready to play this weekend in the Fall Classic. So good luck to the Pens this year.
Appreciate that.
Both the big guys and your guys.
Yeah.
And we'll be rooting for you always.
Awesome. I appreciate that. And, yeah. Thank you so much for having me on, Julie.
Thanks, Dan. Yep.